Well, welcome back to Breaking Ground Commercial Real Estate Podcast. We're so excited to be here today. My name is Kenya Sanchez. I'm a commercial real estate agent. I love to help you find your space from your dream to a reality.
Hey everyone, this is Tao Nguyen, also a commercial real estate agent, and help the clients build generational wealth through real estate investments.
Hi, and I'm Latoya Flanagan. I'm a commercial real estate agent, and I like helping new businesses and entrepreneurs navigate complex real estate transactions.
Yes, and we're excited today because we have a guest. Our guest is a powerhouse who blends strategy, heart, and unapologetic storytelling. Doria Wimberly is the grant writer and the visionary behind Sailor Justice. She helped raise over $14 million for nonprofits, educators, and bold change makers while anchoring her work in equity, creativity, and personal truth. And I'm so honored to welcome Doria to from the Sailor Justice Project. How are you, Doria?
After that introduction, girl,
I don't know.
I'm cheesing so hard. Thank you. Thank y'all for having me. I'm just excited to be here. I'm excited to just like meet y'all, have met y'all at all. Just from the press workshop that we did a few weeks ago and meeting Tao, like it just seems like such a short amount of time, but also a long amount of time. Like I've known y'all forever. So Yeah, really excited to be here. And this is my first time being like invited to a podcast like this. So this is super cool and exciting. So thank you for having me.
Yeah, so excited. Well, we met Doria through Tao. Tao is our networker and our connector here. And once we met her, we just thought, oh my gosh, there's so much that we can do. And so we did our workshop, which was amazing.
Yes. Right. Yes.
It was amazing.
Great turnout.
Yes.
Really good turnout. Yeah.
And then we got on the phone again, and we're like, okay, let's talk a little bit more. And then we were like, girl, we got to get on a podcast and talk about a lot of these other things that you do, plus the social media, because she has a lot of information.
Very good tips on social media.
They have just listened to my rants. I get on a soapbox and start ranting. They were like,
Because
I like entertaining podcasts. Yeah,
right about it.
Yes. So yeah, we can talk about all the things. I'm ready.
Yes. Well, also, we want to wish her a happy belated birthday.
Happy birthday was yesterday.
Yeah, I just turned 34. I'm so excited because everybody's like, oh my God, you don't look 34. And I'm like, oh, I'm the one to be obnoxious and be like, guess my age when I turn 34. Guess my age.
Yeah.
But yeah, super excited for 34. I spent 34 exactly the way I wanted to at the spa. Ooh, getting the massage.
That's
and
awesome. Room.
Always been doing nothing. And then I flew down here for this podcast.
From Chicago.
Yes, from Chicago. And for a K-pop concert because I'm a stay and Stray Kids is, you know, I'm a Felix bias, so I had to be here for that.
That's awesome. She's living her life. Her birthday.
Living a dream.
Well, I want to ask you, you helped raise over $14 million, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
What's one moment in the journey that really affirmed your purpose and how did you get this done?
Oh, affirmed my purpose. So what really helped solidify me as a grant writer was the full-time job that I had when I was a grant administrator. The supervisor that I had, Shaylin Scott, is a powerhouse fundraiser that knows so much about business of all scales, small, medium, large. She knows so much about grant writing, fundraising in general. She just, like, she was my supervisor that I felt like was a mentor and just poured into me. And she was also another Black woman doing this. Mm-hmm. And so I was just like, wow, I had no idea that this was available. I was a grant manager working in Dallas College, so I knew about working under grants in education, but I had no idea about the fundraising world at the scale that she was at. And there's quite a few of my like $1 million grants that were awarded while I was under her supervision working full time. And so like I got her feedback and like her guidance and leadership. And then of course, like she co-authored some of those, a lot of those, because she was like I would do the initial writing. She would go in and edit, give me feedback. Mm-hmm. And so her feedback is what grew me. That $14 million, that raising that is what grew me as a grant writer, because I really didn't feel like I knew what I was doing at all during that time. So yeah, like really what really made me feel solid was having that from her, and then just repetition, doing grants over and over again, and then being surprised every time they got awarded. And then when I never did the final number until it was time to do a report for work. And so then when I did the report, I was like, oh my God, this is how much was raised. Ooh. And then I was like highlighting which ones that I wrote on and went back and looked at the drive just to like prove to myself that I did do this. Because I still, even after writing some of the stuff, didn't really believe that I was a person that could do that.
That's awesome.
And so then when I highlighted everything, I started crying and was just like, oh my God, I'm doing this. I'm really freaking doing this. So after seeing the evidence on a spreadsheet and having guidance from a really wonderful person, that made me feel confident enough that I can step out and do this on my own.
There's something that I've learned recently is called the thermostat. And it's not because our thermostat and the temperature, but it's the thermostat of our mindset of understanding numbers and like in the financial side, right?
Mm-hmm.
So like sometimes we grew up just thinking of, oh, I can make $1,000, you know, $10,000. But when we start understanding the levels of actual like dollar bills that can grow,
mm-hmm.
then you're like, oh, I can actually reach that.
Yes.
You know, so like now knowing 14 million.
Yes.
So I'm sure your thermostat's
That wasn't a goal. Obviously we have like had our like annual revenue goals mm-hmm. for the job, but that was just like what I was doing for the job. I wasn't seeing that as like, oh, I'm going to raise all this money by myself. Also because like I was under leadership, right? Like mm-hmm. there was the CEO and then there was my supervisor and then they had established relationships with funders. So that contributed to that. So that's where I felt like I didn't really feel like I should take credit for mm-hmm. it because they already had these established relationships. My supervisor was already like this powerhouse fundraiser and they brought me in to do the grant writing part because my supervisor needed to do what she needed to do, which was not sitting behind a computer grant writing all day.
Mm-hmm.
And so once I actually did it, even after doing it, writing it, copy and pasting it into the portal, pressing submit, I still was like, I'm not sure if this mm-hmm. is like, I wasn't feeling super confident about it. So it like 100%, there is something to the mental state of how much money you're introduced to as a child,
mm-hmm.
of what you believe you can attain as an adult.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no way that I thought that I was going to be able to. I never thought about raising $1 million, much less 14. Like, that just seemed like, for what reason? Like, what is 14 million going to do? But now I understand how much. 1 million is really not enough. 2 is not really enough when you're talking about running a full program, paying staff, retention, really making an impact. So it's just like, so then it made me realize, oh, there are millions of dollars that are needed to just run basic 3 full-time employee nonprofits.
Mm-hmm.
$1 million is not nearly enough.
Yeah.
So my mind needs to stretch way beyond for us to make the impact that I want to make. So yeah. Yeah, which absolutely, that makes so much sense.
Well, and a lot, you said you had a good mentor, so a lot mm-hmm. is attributed to how confident you are on your own, but you can attribute that to your mentor just steering you along the way. So that's always nice to have a person to guide
mm-hmm.
you, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And she's so well known. I was like wondering if I should like name drop her, but she's so well known as just in DFW and mm-hmm. just so good at what she does.
Mm-hmm.
And she's been working in nonprofits for so long. She has so much knowledge and she just freely shared it. I was like crying because I had just been praying for a supervisor mm-hmm. like her for
yeah.
so long. Because mm-hmm. she just freely gave me information, freely gave me exposure to stuff,
mm-hmm.
sent me on conferences, gave me experiences that I didn't even know existed in the professional world coming from higher education.
Right.
Just, and then because of the nature of the nonprofit helping small businesses, I had to learn the nonprofit sector and the for-profit sector
mm-hmm.
simultaneously coming from education. And mm-hmm. so she was just such a great mentor in helping me navigate how to transition and out of higher education and into that. And then also just being really open and transparent about how to do this. Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah. So with that, you talk about storytelling. I think this is kind of like a big part of you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us a little bit of how that goes into the actual grant writing?
Yeah. So the storytelling, from a kid, I was an avid reader. Harry Potter is why I have a Harry Potter tattoo.
Mm-hmm.
And so being an avid reader, the more you read, that makes you a better writer. And so in writing grants, the things that I realized that I love about young adult, just fun stories are also the things that make a grant compelling. So when you're reading a story, like you keep reading it because the story is so good and you feel emotionally connected to what's gonna happen next. And so when you're thinking about grant writing, you think about your organization or the leader of the organization as the main character in a story.
Mm-hmm.
And
like
so
that.
Like you think about that and you're like, okay, how do you get the reader who's the funder to emotionally connect to the story. And so I took that and applied it over to the grant writing. And then, of course, like, data and stats are what you need. Like, funders want to feel the story and they want to know that you're being successful and they want to see data and stats to back it up. And so that's where, like, a lot of, like, my STEM background, I really originally went to college for engineering because I was an athlete and math was my thing. So I'm like, you combine those two things and then you get a grant writer, a mathlete, Harry Potter fan.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So you're magical.
Yeah. So the storytelling.
So
the storytelling aspects comes out of just my personal life and what I like to read. But I found that if you know how to combine it and do the balance right of telling the story of not just the people who are of the organization itself, but depending on the grant and their focus, also like looking at the community that they're being served, that they are also a highlighted main character in the story. So whoever your community is, okay, what, and this is where the social justice comes out of me. What does this community need me to say on their behalf that they can't say? And that's where I have to go and do my own internal research. I have to continue to listen to podcasts and do stuff beyond grant training, beyond just this, like, how do you do a grant? I need to social justicely know currently today, what are the issues in every single community and what are the sub issues and what are the sub issues that only that community would know. Right.
Yeah,
that's, and that's specific to every community. Mm-hmm. So if I'm writing for this community, I need to know that deep down where the things are. So I know how to communicate and put stats and tie, because the numbers can tell you a story, but you need a story. So yes. I need to, so for me, I, as a grant writer, as a social justice grant writer, that's what sets me apart, is the social justice part. Okay. You can know how to critically grant write. You can have a really low social justice understanding of things and be an okay grant writer that gets stuff done. But like, the more you are, because you're writing for nonprofits who are doing social justice work, the more knowledgeable you are about social justice initiatives, the more creative you can be about how you tell that narrative, because you have to show us a creative solution to a problem that's existed for a long time with current technology.
Mm-hmm. So can you give us an example of a social justice company that you've done grant for?
Sure. So who do I want to talk about? I'll talk about my recent client who's like, we're preparing for an interview right now. We applied for a grant and she moved on to the interview process. So that means she moved on to the short list, and they're seriously considering funding her. Nice. This is an organization for safety reasons, I'm not going to say the name of the organization.
Okay,
But the organization provides resources and safe places for transgender women.
Okay.
And so, as you know, with everything that's been going on with our current administration and the anti-DEI movement, funders have been either pulling money or holding money and not releasing money. And so me and this client had to take a bit of a break because they were experiencing some funder issues.
Mm-hmm.
And the grants that we applied for, we have to wait until they, you know, review and get back and all of that. And so she just sent me an email letting me know that they've, so we're going to meet next week to walk through how do you do the interview, how do you do all of this. And so this grant, we did a few. I think this one is either for the $25,000 or the $50,000 one. It's one of those two ones.
Wow.
So we're doing that. And so that client, so in writing for this client, I am not a part of that community.
Right.
And so I assume that I have a problematic lens that has been worked on, but there's probably elements of problematicness that exist that I have not seen yet. So I go into it understanding that I am in a privileged position in this community and that my lens will by default do some things because of the media and conditioning of this country. So I have to then, like, along with all of the work and training I've done as an ally, and then look at, okay, so where am I missing gaps? And then how is this potentially coming across in my writing? And then on the other side, what are the new issues? What are the current issues? What are the issues that impact trans women of color? Because the racial divide does not go away, right? And so like that, the difference between the needs of white transgender folks and folks of color are different, and then it goes down and down and deeper. And so for a client like that, that's where I'm like, it's that I have a lot of resources and friends and family that were do because of my work in higher education. I have professionals in my world that do ally work. And so I can go to them as a professional, like, hey, I need just some consultation. Just kind of talk me through, like, help me. I know I have blind spots. Help me identify where they are. And so I have my community that helps me identify my blind spots. And then I can use that information. Like, if I have those blind spots and I'm actively working to learn this stuff for all communities across all of the way, my reader probably has that same issue, yeah, if not more so, if they're not actively doing stuff about it. So how do I communicate and explain these issues in a way that's compelling to someone that may not understand how deep of root of an issue this is?
Yeah, so you have to kind of educate them.
Yes, too. Yes. Because you only get, like, what, I don't know how much, you don't get that much time because the funder's going to, like, scan through. And mm-hmm. But, like, if you don't get them, you don't get them. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Makes sense.
I cut you off. I'm sorry.
No,
that's your statement.
No, I wasn't. Cal, did you want to ask anything?
Yeah. So we mentioned about the root. You talk about being rooted in the equity. What does that actually look like day to day when you work with organizations that don't have a lot of resources?
Yeah. So working with organizations that don't have a lot of resources, that's why all my meetings, I mean, a lot of people do virtual meetings. All my meetings are virtual and all of my meetings are through Zoom, and I set them all up because sometimes just as simple as paying that Zoom subscription fee for my nonprofits mm-hmm. can be a bit. So just dialing back and simply looking at small, simple things and not getting too complicated to make it easier for my client when I know, like, what are the, like, as a small business owner, I know, man, the first time I paid the Zoom annual subscription fee, I was like, whoo, this is a lot of money. It felt like a lot of money because it was coming from my business. Yeah. So I think about those, like, small inconveniences, and then because a lot of times what gets in the way of stuff getting done is just the leader having time to do it. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they don't have time to book the calendar. They don't have time. Yeah. So having my, like, on my website, I have links where if they need to do a follow-up appointment, there's a link where they can just click it and just book on my calendar. They don't have to email me. They don't have to do nothing. Yeah. On a wider scale, for organizations that don't have that are struggling, I start with foundation funding first, because foundation funding usually can get cashed out a little bit faster, especially if you don't have a pre-established relationship with some of these, like, other funders. So I usually start with foundations, and then I talk to them about, kind of like what you're talking about with social media, I ask them about their social media presence and then encourage them to increase or improve it. And so that's kind of where that conversation comes, like, okay, funders are looking. They're looking.
You told us, and that's kind of what was exciting, right?
Right.
She mentioned about, I mean, you're asking, you say you're being active. Mm-hmm. You say that you're requesting funds. But where's the proof? You're not talking about it on your social media.
Yeah.
So can
where
you
are the videos? Where's the pictures? And I mean, granted, I worked in higher ed, so it's a lot of nonprofit higher ed stuff is real similar. Not enough people, too many hats, not enough money, right? Those are the reasons why it's not posted. So I know that, you know that, but we know that because we working in a similar way. Mm-hmm. The person that's giving you this check may not know or understand that, because some of these, especially family foundations, these funds have been handed down generation to generation. You just happen to be the generation that's managing this money. That was your great auntie Muriel that cared about education and was a teacher and all that. I don't do none of that. I'm just here fulfilling what she said legally we're supposed to do in this little trust foundation situation. Can you mind reading that question one more time? I got lost in my own thoughts.
Oh, no. You were just kind of going off. No, you were talking about the actual social media.
Yes.
And the importance and how they're looking. And so.
Yeah. So it's like. LinkedIn, for example, it is shocking to me how many nonprofits don't have a LinkedIn. It is shocking to me how many nonprofits don't post on their LinkedIn. Your funders are primarily on LinkedIn. LinkedIn. And then for millennials, we're on Instagram for everything.
Yeah.
If you do not have a LinkedIn and an Instagram, I'm really trying to figure out what you're doing. And who are you marketing to? And who knows about you? And who are you telling? Are you emailing only? Have you checked your email and what your email inbox look like? Do you read all those emails from the beginning to the end? Child, if all you're doing is sending emails, nobody's going to know who you are. Mm-mm. You need to post on a regular basis. And the thing that I see is that people want quality content, but I don't think people understand. As a content creator now, because that's the other, just what I do too, There is so much work that goes into editing, producing, and recording a 15 to 30 second reel. And I think that there is a lack of education and appreciation that these are not just content creators doing things for funsies. There's equipment involved. We have three cameras set up. There is equipment involved. There's expertise involved. There's all these things. And so not only do you need to have a social media account active, you need to invest a quality amount of money in a quality social media person. And I know that some nonprofits are like, I can't afford a full-time. Get a quality contractor. Budget out a good amount of money for a quality contractor that can do a, like, they can do 3 to 6 months bulk of scheduling stuff out, so that you can have quality content that matches the quality of work you do. Well, why would you work so hard? Go ahead, go ahead.
I was gonna say, what do you think about using a student? I hear people say maybe like have a student do, you know, like a that's in social, studying social media, do some content creation. What do you think about that?
I think that there's benefits to that, and I think that that has been widely abused by the industry, and students get the short end of the stick on that. I like my students to get experience. The work that they do needs to be paid. I don't believe in free internships. Free internships is just a fancy way to say free slavery, and I'm not here for it. This country was founded on slavery. It was founded on free labor. We try to find free labor wherever we can get it. Using our, pimping out our students for free labor is absolutely just continuing that system. So if you have free interns working for you, you have students and you're not paying them, you're participating in upgraded fun slavery.
That's the way to look at it.
So for students, I love the idea of having a student come on board and work on that. Are you handing them a project they can be successful with? Are you expecting 10 years experience level quality from a college student fresh out of a program? Are you assuming that because they're young and Gen Z that they're going to be able to produce this viral content for you? Not understanding that being Gen Z alone is not enough for skill.
Right.
So I think students are a great way to go. If you are okay with that, if you have the capacity, if you really have the heart of a teacher and have the capacity to let that student learn and let that student make mistakes and grow with you, because if you're going to bring on a student, you have to anticipate there's a certain level of learning curve that's going to happen. So you need to assess yourself. Do you have the patience to allow a student to grow and develop in your business? Or are you looking for something that's like a surefire thing that's going to happen and you're going to get, see these kind of results? If you want, depending on the kind of results you want, depends on who you need to get. And also, you as a leader need to assess, am I emotionally stable enough? Because if you are a leader and you're not in counseling, you are also part of the problem. If you are you emotionally stable enough to bring on a student and grow them? Because I've had my students and sent them off to internships with emotionally unstable supervisors who took out their inability to manage on my student. And the minute you take out anything on my student, those are mine. Those are my babies. I like to say, like, you send me an email, I'm not going to respond. I'm getting up and I'm going to knock your office. I've pulled up on some folks at internships. So I love the idea of students working and doing social media. I would love for managers to manage their expectations. And also to appreciate that this student is doing something in their young 20-something year old years that you cannot. So appreciate that. I've seen a lot of students get beat up on in that way. So I'm really passionate about supervise students as if they are students, not as if they are 10-year tenured professionals. If that is the option you go with, again, make sure you are the kind of manager that knows how to manage them. If you want to bring on a student, I would recommend go maybe do some management development courses on how to supervise to make sure that you are a safe place for that student to thrive. Because a lot of times it's not the student issue.
Good advice.
Did you have something to say, Chair? No? Well, you're talking about students, and why do you share that about students? What was your background?
Oh, fair, right? My background is in higher education. Prior to grant writing, I was working in higher education for 10 years. My master's is in student affairs in higher education. Graduated from Texas State and then went on to work my additionally more years in higher education. I was the traditional student leader in undergrad. I was a RA. I was an admission count. I was a, like, I guess a student worker in admissions, and I gave tours and did like some basic intake stuff for, you know, before they went to the admission counselor, but just so many years working in education. And so I've had 10 years of students. So now it's crazy. I get on Facebook, like, there's another student getting married and pregnant. And I'm like, we're like, you're too young to be having babies and getting married. I'm like, no, you're exactly the right age. This is the age you're supposed to be. And so, yeah, I spent a decade of my career and a lot of student loan money learning how to take care of students. And so taking care of students is my passion and my first love. Mm-hmm. And so I still work with higher education and writing grants for colleges. Right. And so I'm still like involved in the education and student space. But yeah, I'm super passionate about students because I've worked at universities. I've worked at community colleges. I've worked in San Marcos. Mm-hmm. And then I've worked in Dallas. Mm-hmm. I've worked in Tarrant County. I've worked in Dallas County. Across the board, I've seen my students get beat up on. There's something about the insecurity of a manager and a college mm-hmm. student going after their dreams that really triggers people. Mm-hmm. And
I wouldn't guess that.
They treat the students mm-hmm. in a way that they can't get away with treating their full-time mm-hmm. staff.
That's, yeah, I can see that.
And then usually that student doesn't have an advisor like me right. who's not afraid to drive to the internship site.
We need more of you.
I'm not above an internship visit to visit you, manager, and have a conversation. Because also these students are first generation and don't have parents that can advocate for them in that way because their parents have not done that yet. Then, specifically because of where I was working, I was at Mountain View College. Majority of my students were Spanish speakers. And so their parents usually only spoke yeah. Spanish. So also these students are being taken advantage of because the people that are doing this also know that their parents can't come and advocate for them like that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's why I'm super passionate about students because that's what I spent my career and student loans working on and training for. And I've just seen like organizations could really, really benefit from student work if they know how to do it
yes.
properly.
Yeah. Give them the opportunity to learn.
Yes.
You'll get something in return.
Yes.
But make sure that they're growing.
Yes.
Absolutely. And with that being said, tell us, Sailor Justice. It's just a powerful name.
Period.
What does it mean? What
perfect it come to life? Way.
Yeah.
The Sailor Justice Project is a combination of exactly what makes me. A black girl growing up in the suburbs who loves anime. And my favorite anime is what? Sailor Moon.
I never put that together.
Yes. I always wanted to be a Sailor Scout.
My brother loved anime growing up, so I knew some. I know some of it, but I never put that. I guess I didn't see that one.
Yeah. Yeah. Sailor Moon is my ish. I also talk about K-pop a lot because that's the new thing, but Sailor Moon was, I was in the 90s watching Sailor Moon, and then when I got to high school and I got a laptop, I was rewatching the illegal uploads on YouTube. So, huge fan, and always wanted to be a Sailor Scout. Also from high school, social justice was really important to me. I didn't realize that's what it was, what it was called, why I was so passionate about things not being fair or equitable, but I had no qualms with going to the principal and telling them about what I felt and what I thought and what needs to be changed and what teachers was doing X, Y, and Z. And I had no problem standing up in class and being like, actually, what you're doing is real messed up and problematic. And because on this homework assignment and based on what you said, I did it in eighth grade.
Wow.
She gave us an assignment and she gave us the wrong date. And then she was going to give me a zero because I didn't turn it in on time. And I stood up in the back of class and just completely just shut the whole class down. She had to send me to the office. But I was like, not before I make my point here, right here. This is the date that's printed. The date that's on the board is not the date that's printed. I went off. So she was like, because I embarrassed her in front of the class and I was right, she couldn't afford to agree with me. Mm-hmm. So she sent me in a hallway or whatever, and I went down to the principal's office and I got in trouble. But social justice has always been really important to me. And I've never been afraid to stand up and say a thing. And I'm like, oh, this is a gift. Mm-hmm. This is my calling. This is what I'm supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
And so when I was the pandemic happened, I was in higher education and my goal was still to be like a president and to go up and through higher education. And I was being bullied at work. I went through EAP counseling, which is like their assistance program to get you free counseling. Mm-hmm. And the counselor pretty much told me that if I didn't leave this job, I wasn't going to make it. And so her prescription was for me to quit effective immediately. And so she wrote me a letter that I submitted to HR, and I was able to quit effective immediately because it was that bad. Mm-hmm. I'd probably go to court and win. Not going to, though. And then after I left, I was just like, I really just need to make some money. And I had a friend that was like, I know that you wrote that one grant that one time. And I was like, girl, I didn't even leave that. I don't know what I was doing. And she was like, I have a guy and we're doing some work around grants. We just need somebody that kind of know. Mm-hmm. We can learn together. It's cool. And I'm like, cool. So I got paid as a contractor for the first time off of a friend that also left that college in a toxic situation too. Right. And it was amazing. So he was like, pay me. And I was just like, okay, let's write. Then his friend needed a grant. And then his cousin needed a grant. And his cousin, friend, baby mama, cousin needed a grant.
We all need them.
Everybody needs a grant. And I was like, oh, okay. And they were like, for business purposes, for tax purposes, you should probably open up a business account. And I'm like, well, how do I open up a business account? They're like, start a business. And I'm like, okay. How I do that? So I literally started the business by just Googling, like, how do I open up a bank account? And they're like, yeah, you just file this form. Mm-hmm. Here's the form. Fill it out. Little did I know, I'm filling out the form to get my EIN. Like, this is me filling out. This is serious stuff. And I'm just like, government documents, la, la, la. Education, that's all I look at. Cool. This is short. Submit. Cool. I have business now. Opened up my business account and started writing and just never looked back. And so when I was coming up trying to decide on the name, I was like, I want to be a Sailor Scout. I love social justice.
I love it.
Sailor Justice Project.
Yeah, that's good.
That's really awesome. Good. Yeah.
Thanks.
That fits.
Thanks.
The mission.
Thanks.
So what advice would you give to someone who wants to do mission-driven work and get paid for it?
Make sure the mission that mission-driven is something that's a part of your life. That's a part of your day-to-day. That's a part of your core being of who you are as a person day-to-day. Look at what you have in your house. Look at where you shop. Look at just everything that makes you you. Where do you, what kind of cup do you drink out of? Where do you shop? Like, are you sure that's still at Target? Are you like, what are the things that you're doing on a day to day that just are kind of routine that are not in line with mission driven work? Okay. And once you start analyzing yourself in that way, then you know you're ready to help someone else do that. And if you can't do that for your own self in your own life, you need to get paid to do something else. Mission work, it seems like it's a easy thing to kind of venture into because it seems like it's kind of like associated with those soft skills. And soft skills, I don't think, are seen as skills in the way that they are when you're talking about a skill like math or coding or something like that. It is a skill. It has to be worked. It has to be developed.
Yeah,
if you cannot do that for yourself, then you cannot do that for another organization, and you're causing more harm than you are help if you are not doing that internal work. So I would say start with yourself, go to counseling for 6 months straight for at least every 2 weeks. Talk to your counselor about all your stuff, because all your personal stuff, there's no separation of work. All of your stuff is going to dump into your work. And so if you want to make the impact, you got to deal with your stuff. You got to deal with your trauma, especially because usually people are doing work that are closely related to the trauma that they experienced. So go heal that before your trauma manifests into more harm. So that is the advice I would give people. People have a lot of passion, whole lot of passion. Pause, take care of yourself. The second thing is don't take out a loan. Start with the money that you have. And if that means working full time and just doing it on the side until you have the money, it's much better to do it slowly. And I know it's like the kids are hungry right now. They're going to be hungry in 10 years because this system ain't changing and it's problematic. You don't need to be starving, though. So if it means working a full-time job, doing it on the side until you can get your 501c3 paperwork in and getting all your stuff in, also understand as a nonprofit, you get your 501c3. You may have a hard time in the first 2 years getting a grant writer because some grant writers will not work with you if you haven't been established long enough, because getting that first funder is so much work. And so the amount that they would charge you, you can't afford yet unless you have that savings with you. So having that savings helps you get more money, because then you can hire grant writers and other people to help you put your nonprofit together in the first 2 to 3 years. After that second year and you get your first funder and you kind of get your stuff off of the ground and you have some good, warm, established relationships with some funders, it makes it much easier for the grant writer to do their job. Because if you don't have relationships with funders, that makes it much more difficult. Also, don't make your board your friends. Your board needs to be diverse in industry and experience. Everybody should not be a nonprofit. Everybody should not be in education. It should be diverse. And your board should expect, especially if you're young, to be doing some form of fundraising. They should be connecting you with funders who are interested in funding you. They should be going to networking events and galas and bringing you up. They should be helping you. They should be not just showing up to board meetings and like making you like go through the budget a million times and ask you a bunch of questions and stuff and making you feel grilled. Like, they should be going to work for you and they should be happy to do so because they're passionate about the work.
That's so important.
Yes. So find a strong board. I've worked with organizations that had weak boards, great mission, great everything else, couldn't get funding because they didn't have a supportive board. Mm-hmm. And I've seen people wipe their whole board out and restart.
Yeah.
And make progress in 6 months they couldn't make in 3 years.
Yeah.
So that would be my advice. Heal and get a good board.
Tell me, you want to close this out?
So what's next? What's next for you and Sailor Justice?
What's next? Oh, that's a great question. Actually, right before I got here, so I decided, I just started developing a training that I'm going to do. And my goal is to have 200 organizations participate in this training.
Ooh.
It's going to be a half day, 3-part training, where part one is, how do you navigate grants in Trump's administration? It is different. It's 100% different. We finna unpack it, and we're going to name it under what it is. I'm not going to use language to soften. Under Trump's administration, how we do grants, because it's different now.
I'm just going to lay it out.
100%. That's how I am. Second part is going to be, how do you search for grants? And so I haven't secured it yet, but I have a partner in mind that does grant searching as a software. And I'm going to have, what I would like for them to do is to come in and present on how to use it. They have a free 30-day trial that people can use. And so people can use that to build their pipeline, because the pipeline is the hugest thing. You need to be able to build a list of grants you're going to apply for, the way you would build a list of scholarships. So the second part is going to be how to use that software. And in the training, they will have a list of grants at the end of it. And then the last part will be giving them a template where they can write out some of the main things that they need for grants. So like having their address, EIN, leadership, bios, and then like probably about 8 to 10 of the top asked questions in grants, and then give them that template. They'll start to fill that out in session, and then they get to take that home for homework.
Nice.
And so they'll get to do some in-person like evaluating on what they do in small group settings at the end, and then we'll close it out. I'm doing this because a lot of nonprofits can't afford to bring me on as a full-time grant writer yet. They don't have the funds.
Mm-hmm.
And so doing a course that's at a much more accessible price, if they can't afford me as a full-time grant writer, they probably can't afford most grant writers, but they can afford this.
Yeah, that's good.
And so then the other thing about these courses that I don't like when I pay for them is I don't leave with anything. Mm-hmm. So I want them to leave with something. So you'll leave with a list of grants that you can apply for. You'll leave hoping that the partnership goes through. I'm still in negotiations. That, you know, maybe you get a free 30-day or a free 6 weeks to play around with this. And so even if you don't move forward, you still get to use the service and you still get a list at the end. And you leave with a document that you can fill out, that you and your team can get together and fill out in an additional training. Have that for the year. Then if you can't afford a grant writer, you have a solid document you can pull from to at the very least get you your first 2 or 3. So then you can hire.
So they would do it themselves at that point?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But then they can come to her and get the bigger.
Yes.
Yeah, once they get the grant.
Yes.
The small ones, they can come to you and get the bigger.
Yes. So the last part will be walking them through, like, what do you need to have in this? How do you fill it out? What to look for? Giving them the layout of how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And then let them do some of it in the small group at the end. And then I know I won't have enough time for them to do all of it, but give them enough where they kind of know what to do and how to guide their team and at least who to pull from their team to do these other parts.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I'm going to, so I developed that. So that's what I'm going to be doing. I'm aiming to have that at the end of July. And so, at the end of July is when I'm going to host it. And so all of the marketing, media, and all of that is going to start to go out next week.
Okay. Which, by the way, she's great at marketing. Amazing.
Remind us how many percentage of people that sign up for the grant writing that we all the don't know button came to us because of the marketing and social media.
Really?
She's asking what's the percentage that that we had signed up at our workshop.
I don't know
anymore. It was 100%. I think that, so 84%. Yeah. 84%. That's really good.
That's all from your marketing efforts.
Well, that's our marketing efforts because it works when you have more than one person posting about the thing. The algorithm pushes it.
Right.
So if it's only one person, like, everybody contributed. Like, the way, there's no way if I would have posted it by myself that I would have got that number. Mm-hmm. No way. Not in that amount of time. I've gotten that number, but not in a much longer period of time.
Yeah, because we only had, like, 2 weeks.
Yeah, because we all collectively posted only on more than one algorithm using a lot of the same language and stuff. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It picks up on that. Oh.
And we were tagging each other.
Yeah, we were.
Yeah, that was a collective effort. We did great.
Yeah, this is a good feeling. That's what I was saying, that I've done events, and sometimes it's just me and that feeling of, like, pulling every little piece together.
Oh, so stressful. No. Yeah, I don't want to do that.
But then everybody here, it's like, I'll bring this, I'll bring that, I'll bring that. We all have our different little skills. Mm-hmm. Just make it happen. It's easy. Afterwards, I think most of us were able to go do extra stuff.
Yeah.
Chores.
I finished a grant after. I submitted a grant after and was like, yeah, I'm chilling.
You feel stressed or like you need to take a nap.
Yeah.
It wasn't heavy. It was easy to flow. So, well, we're so excited. We hope that. We're excited to have you here today and talk to you and get people to know about what you do. But also, hopefully, we get to work together again in the future.
Absolutely.
I think
we're going to have to block me and get rid of me.
Yeah.
Oh, we're going to come to Chicago.
Period.
Because we're going to put that out there.
We can take it to Chicago. Absolutely. And then, like, I'm hoping that my place has, I would like to get a multi-bedroom situation, but I'm cool with a one-bedroom. But if I can get a multi-bedroom situation.
Oh, we don't mind staying at a hotel.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I love staying at a hotel, but I'm also the hostess with them. I love hosting.
Imagine that.
I like hosting. Awesome. It's fun.
I've only been there once, so I'm ready to
get there. But no, like, also, like, it's also worth it to get the hotel, looking over the lake and everything. Mm-hmm. Like,
that's exciting. Yeah, we got to plan it. So we've been putting stuff on the calendar, and it's happening all the time that we do that. So we just got to look and call each other and make that happen soon. Mm-hmm. Well, how can people find you? Oh, did you have a question?
Oh, people can find me on Instagram, LinkedIn, TikTok, and Facebook. So, the Sailor Justice Project everywhere. So, at the Sailor Justice Project on Instagram, the Sailor Justice Project on LinkedIn, the Sailor Justice Project on Facebook. TikTok is just, like, my personal, like, K-pop account, but I also post grand stuff over there. But, like, if you're a K-pop girly, your girl Sailor Justice over on TikTok. Mm.
Because she's going to a concert tomorrow.
Felix is waiting for me.
That's awesome. Well, it was such a good time having you and talking to you again. This is our second time in person. Every other time is through the screen.
Yeah.
But it feels like we've known each other for a long time. Thank you. We appreciate it.
Legit. I appreciate y'all. Thank you for having me.
Thanks
for being such an easy group to talk to. I didn't really feel this went so fast.
Like, already? Well, thank you. And, well, have a great day. Until next time.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.